Eastern Michigan with the help of senior Jasmine Leoval, who grew up in San Diego, needing a birdie at the last to knock out Texas. Oh, wow! Leoval, it falls. Hoopla ensues. The Eastern Michigan Eagles soar into the semis, coming your way in 1 hour as Golf Today starts now.
Golf Today.
And we're getting closer to live coverage of the semifinal matches of the NCAA Women's D1 Golf Championships, all coming your way at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel. We get closer to crowning a national champion. And these were the quarterfinal matches seen earlier on Golf Channel. And then there were four. Eastern Michigan will try and keep its dream season alive against the powerhouse Stanford Cardinal. Arkansas faces USC in the other semifinal. This is Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Ryan Lavner. Tell you what, that was some fantastic golf this afternoon.
This is unbelievable. I mean, Eastern Michigan is essentially college golf's answer to Indiana football. Here's a program that has perennially been outside the top 200. They've never even made a regional. What happens? They bring in an established coach in Josh Brewer, which is obviously a bad look for my Georgia Bulldogs, which let him go 2 years ago. You work the transfer portal. You round up area alumni who have contributed $14 million to the golf programs over the past couple years. Now you get a chance to shock the world in number one Stanford in the semifinals. This is college athletics in 2026. It's certainly different than we saw a couple of decades ago, but it sure is fun.
Yeah, semifinals coming your way, 6 p.m. Eastern time while the kids are out in California. How about the PGA Tour? They're in the midst of a Texas two-step. These are some of the images on Sunday. Wyndham Clark earning his fourth career win on the PGA Tour at the CJ Cup. Byron Nelson, it was a final round 60 for Wyndham, who won for the first time since 2024 Pebble, where he also shot 60 in the third and final round of the rain shortened event. This week, the PGA Tour stays in Texas for the Charles Schwab Challenge. Historic Colonial Country Club is the host site. You can catch live first round coverage this Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Golf Channel. Terrific field for Hogan's Alley. Ben Griffin, the defending champ. Ludwig Oberg, Ricky Fowler. How about the 2025 U.S. Open champ, J.J. Spahn? Justin Thomas making his first start at Colonial since 2022. So for more from Fort Worth, Texas, let's bring in Rex Hoggard. What's up, pal?
Damon, we've been talking about for weeks the idea that the PGA Tour is going to go to a two-tier system, Tier 1 and Tier 2. And as our colleague Eamon Lynch reported last week, the PGA Tour is going to, quote-unquote, strongly discourage Tier 1 players from playing in Tier 2 events. Now, consider this week's event at Colonial. There are 21 players out of last year's top 50 from the final season point list playing in this field. That means they're qualified for all of the signature events. Essentially, they are Tier 1 players. Now, we don't know if Colonial is going to be a Tier 1 or Tier 2 event, but you get an idea how complicated this might be for the PGA Tour. The fact of the matter is, sometimes the top players don't follow the money or the points.
It'd definitely be one of those ones where, yeah, if it was a 2 and it worked schedule-wise and it made sense, like this is, like I said, it's always one I've enjoyed playing. I love this golf course. You know, we don't get to play very many old school golf course or kind of architecture or design anymore. So we'll kind of see how things shake out where, you know, track one or track two and how those, you know, fit. I mean, I'd go to bat and try and get this in the track one area so I can hopefully I continue to play well to be in the track one and then be able to play this as a track one as well.
I've always liked it here. I liked it, the old course. I like the new course. I like the event. They do a heck of a job. And the city, the town, the surrounding area, they get around it. And, yeah, it's a great tournament. So it's going to be one of those tough decisions that has to be made in the next few months is what are we allowed to do and not allowed to do if you're in the Tier 1. And then so I think, you know, I'm not on that committee yet or on that board yet, and I don't envy those guys, but that'll be a tough call.
You know, for the Tier 1 and Tier 2, I think still trying to figure it out, but they want to make it so everybody that gets on the tour gets as many starts as they can. And I get that. As a rookie, it's stressful. You don't know which events you're going to play. And, you know, for me, over the past few years when the schedule has changed, I don't have any input. So I do whatever they tell me to do and try to play my best. If I'm in this tournament, it's a tier one, I'd love that. If it's not and I'm not allowed to, then that's part of the deal.
Now, another example of how complicated this end up might being for the PGA Tour, considering all the Canadians that play on the PGA Tour, clearly they're going to want to play in the Canadian Open, but we don't know if that's going to be a tier one or tier two event. So you get an idea of how awkward this is going to be if the PGA Tour is going to try to mandate where and when certain players can play. Now, it's also worth pointing out the competition committee met this afternoon here at Cologne, and I was told by one player this was very much a subject they wanted to talk about. Boys?
Very interesting, Rex. Appreciate the reporting. See you on later on in the show. And some news on this Tuesday as changes are coming to the PGA Tour's Florida Swing in 2027. The tour sent a memo to players earlier today announcing the changes, which include new dates for the Arnold Palmer Invitational, Cadillac Championship, and the Valspar Champ. Taking a look at what that revamped Florida Swing is going to look like. Doral now leading in to the Players' Championship. Bay Hill following the tour's flagship event and the Valspar Championship being bumped to May. Dame, a lot of changes. Again, this is for 2027. Rex is talking about the Tier 1, the Tier 2 system. That's a 2028 conversation
right,
and beyond. As it relates to the new schedule that's going to be coming out in 2027, we're getting a lot of confirmed dates at this point. What do you make of what Florida's going to look like in particular?
I hope it's a one-year thing. It's not great to me seeing Valspar kicked out of the Florida Swing and moved to May. I also find it a little bit strange that you have the Arnold Palmer Invitational following the Players' Championship. I feel like the Players should be, for the most part, the crowning event of the Florida Swing. And I know Valspar
But it hasn't been.
And I know Valspar has followed it. I would have Valspar before it. I would have all five events in Florida as the Florida Swing, culminating with the Players' Championship, the flagship event of the PGA Tour. You might have heard there's a big discussion about it being the fifth major. I mean, listen, this is the most important event on the PGA Tour schedule. Now, listen, there's a lot of changes to come. This could be a one-year thing, but I feel like ultimately, eventually, the Players' Championship should be the last event or the crowning event of the Florida Swing. Not sure I like API following that. What say you?
Yeah, I'm still viewing 2027 as a transition year.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's going to be a different cadence to the PGA Tour schedule. If you do have these Tier 1 and Tier 2 tournaments, you would expect to have some off weeks built into that as well.
True.
You would most likely had off weeks after major championships. If you're the PGA Tour, you would also have the Players' Championship be viewed as a major championship as well. So I could see an off week after that. It is going to be very interesting in the crunch that you have prior to the Masters in the year's first major. There's a lot of talk about it this year where you had five huge events in a six-week span and guys were spent by the time you're getting out of Florida. Next year is going to be even worse.
Yeah.
If you look at the seven-week span, you're going to have Pebble Beach, Phoenix, Riviera, Doral, Players, Bay Hill, all in a seven-week span. Those are all tournaments that the top guys like to play. They love the golf courses. They love the atmosphere as it relates to Phoenix. And so it's going to be very, very interesting to see which of those tournaments is going to get squeezed. I do think overall, when you're looking at this holistically, I like it better than what we had in 2026, where players typically, the top players do like to play their way into form heading into the Masters, and this is giving them ample opportunity to do so. And when you look at the squeeze that we had this year between the Masters and the PGA Championship, it's going to be alleviated a little bit, where you're going to most likely have a signature event, a full field event, a signature event, a full field event leading into the year's second major. To me, that feels like a little bit more of a release valve, but boy, that run up to the Masters sure is going to be busy.
It is. It's busy. The players are going to be worn out. And when you think about the difficulty of the golf courses leading up to the players, leading up to the Masters, I've always thought that the Bay Hill Players duo in a row, back-to-back, might be the toughest two-week stretch in all of golf. So that's the one concern I do have, is if you start stacking all those Florida events, windswept, difficult, dry, hot conditions, players are going to be pretty worn out by the end of the Florida Swing. That's my one caveat, my one concern.
And that's always been the case, right? Like PGA National, typically, before all the changes they made with the golf course over the past couple years, that's typically been one of the hardest golf courses.
Yeah.
Doral is no pushover. I know Cameron Young went ballistic this year, you know, but the difficulty of that golf course is well known as well. And so, Florida's always going to be tough.
Yeah.
To me, it's that going on the back end of what is a jam-packed West Coast swing as well, with a lot of players who want to play a lot of golf.
Yeah, Blue Monsters and Bear Traps. Oh my.
You know? And just as a reminder, this is how you can watch this week's Tour Stop the Charles Schwab Challenge. Coverage beginning at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Thursday and Friday, right here on Golf Channel. And coming up next on Golf Today, we're turning our attention to the season's next major. Final qualifying is underway for the U.S. Open at Shinnecock. We'll be joined by Adrien Dumont-Deschassart, who recently punched his ticket in Dallas. Stay with us. Welcome back to Golf Today as we look back at some of the images from the season's second major at Aronimink. Aaron Rye shooting a final round 65 to earn his first career major PGA Championship. Rye also became just the second Englishman to hoist the Wanamaker Trophy. Here's a snapshot so far of the championship season. Cameron Young in the Players' Championship cements his star. Rory McIlroy earning his second consecutive green jacket at the Masters. And, buddy, there's still plenty more golf to come this summer.
You ain't kidding. Officially less than a month away from the season's third major, Shinnecock Hills will host the U.S. Open with play beginning on Thursday, June 18th. And this will mark the sixth time that the venue will have hosted this championship, with the last one back in 2018, won by Brooks Koepka, holding off Tommy Fleetwood. Final qualifying officially underway for this year's championship. And recently, Adrien Dumont-Deschassart was one player who was able to punch his ticket to Shinnecock. And Adrien teed it up in Texas at Dallas Athletic Club. Nine players earned spots in the 126-player field. A little bit more about Adrien. 44 career starts on the PGA Tour. A couple of Korn Ferry Tour wins. Play in the Olympics representing Belgium. Three-time Big Ten Player of the Year for Mike Smalls, Illinois, Fighting Illini. And Adrien joins us now. Congrats on making it into Shinnecock. Final qualifying is so unique. You shot 68 and 70. How would you describe final qualifying compared to PGA Tour golf, for example?
It's way different, but I feel like, in a way, it's, you know, back to college where you have to qualify for a tournament. So, you know, even though it's only a one-day thing, you know, you have to make birdies, but you also have to be patient. And I really like the weather condition last Monday, you know, very windy. So I feel like I could be a little more patient. I just stick to my game. And even though, you know, I didn't have my best of the tee, I stayed patient and made a lot of up and downs for pars. With five holes to go, I realized I was one inside. So, you know, I just try to play smart the last five holes and, you know, was able to get a spot for Shinnecock in a month. So really excited for that.
Adrien, your only major start previously was back in 2022 at the U.S. Open. How critical are these major championship starts for you at this point in your career?
Very critical. It's always nice to get that sort of experience. Even though, you know, I play on the PGA Tour, majors are a different level. The course setups are quite different, very challenging. So I'm really looking forward to playing my second US Open. I feel like I learned quite a lot at the country club in Boston in 22. But, you know, it's all about preparation, and I'm just excited to compete against the best players in the world.
I'm always curious how guys go about choosing their final qualifying site. What was your method? You put all the names in a hat. Do you like Dallas? What was the reason behind Dallas Athletic Club for you?
I just wanted to play somewhere where I felt like the travel was going to be easy. I played the CJ Cup last week, so it was quite convenient to play in Dallas right beforehand. I qualified in Ohio in 22. I haven't been back there since. That's probably a place I would want to go back to at some point, but I just feel like Dallas was going to be the just easiest place to do it. I never played the course, didn't play a practice round. I just, you know, had that 18 birdie app, went over some course setup with my caddies and got some good yardage books, and that did the job. So I might have to go back there next year if I have to qualify.
Hopefully, you'll be fully exempt for 2027. Remains to be seen. You're playing this week at Colonial, Adrien. Handful of top 25 finishes so far this season, but you're 95th in the FedEx Cup standings at this point. What's the key for you moving forward to unlocking your best stuff?
What I've realized this year in the last few years, I get to play my best when I drive it good off the tee. So that's something that I've been you know, on my mind, on my focus. You know, I feel like my short game's in a good place. My iron game and wedge game is quite solid. But if I can drive it in play, I feel like I can compete against anyone in the world. So that's definitely something that I need to get a little bit more consistent and a little bit better at. But I feel like if I can do that, you know, I can give myself a good chance to make it to, you know, hopefully one of the playoff events at the end of August.
You know, Adrian, a lot of us were watching Siwoo Kim last week making his run at 59. He did not shoot 59. He shot 60. You have shot 59 on the Korn Ferry Tour. You did it in Wichita, Kansas. What do you remember about that? What memories stay with you a year later?
You know, I mean, that was a pretty special. It wasn't a par 72, so, you know, I didn't shoot 13 under. You know, I just get the round going. And then, you know, once you get to hole 13, 14, you're definitely thinking about how it's possible to shoot 59. You know, the course setup was quite fair that day, and I had my A game. So it's definitely nice to be able to be one of those guys who have shot 59 on the Korn Ferry Tour, PGA Tour. So that's something that, you know, I'll forever take with me, and that's something that I'm proud of.
Adrian, you got caught in the crosshairs a little bit earlier this season at the Valspar Championship, some allegations of slow play. Just curious, when you receive either criticism from some of your peers or some of the online vitriol, how does that affect you as a player on this stage?
You know, I mean, definitely affected me a little bit, you know, right after the tournament, because I really didn't think that was an issue at the time. I didn't, you know, take quite a lot of time on that hole 11. I made a triple bogey. You know, I felt like I was still in a position to do good that round, and, you know, I was in the trees and tried to take the best decision. But I didn't think anything out of it. You know, a rules official came on hole 12 to let me know that we're behind pace, which is quite, you know, normal in those kind of situations. And then, you know, I picked it up, and then we didn't have any more issue after that. So that's something that's in the past now. I'm over it, but, you know, that's something that was definitely a little disappointing at the end of the round, but it is what it is.
Adrian, it's nice to visit with you again. Congrats on making it into Shinnecock. Have a great week in Fort Worth, and we will speak to you soon.
Thank you, guys.
There Bye. He is, Adrian Dumont de Chassard. Just a reminder, he's already in the U.S. Open. We have full coverage of final qualifying, golf's longest day. 11 hours of coverage Monday, June 8th, right here on Golf Channel. It is a very special day and some of the qualifying sites, Ballon Isle, that's in Palm Beach Gardens. You got Del Paso CC in Sacramento. How about Woodmont Country Club, North Course, Rockville, Maryland, back for another spin. Back on Golf Today, reminder, NCAA Division I Women's National Championships are underway at beautiful Omni La Costa Resort and Spa in Carlsbad, California. Match play underway. You can catch live coverage of the semifinals in a half hour right here on Golf Channel. In case you missed the quarters, my goodness, something special. Arkansas against Oklahoma State. Sarah Brenchenev, her par putt to win the match and send Arkansas to the semifinals. Down it goes. 3-2 victory over Yu Chu Chen. Great celebration. 3-0 for Arkansas. Hugs, high fives, a little dancing.
Whirling.
Little dancing.
Why not? You're on to the semis. Here's Southern Cal and Duke. This is Duke's Ana Canyado Spinal. Extend, yanks it left. There's Kylie Chong of USC, who wins 4-3. And Southern Cal is moving on to the semis as well.
Stanford versus Pepperdine. California schools. Maya Ortengren for birdie. Lags it close, good enough, match conceded, beats Grace Anderson. Stanford 3-0, more hugs, more, look at the back rub to boot.
This one, guys, was the story of the quarterfinals, Texas, Eastern Carolina. This is Janae Leavau, already 4-up, put a hurtin' on the NCAA individual champion Farrah O'Keefe, the birdie to win the match. Eastern Michigan, at the time, up 1-0.
Oh, that was absolute barn burner. More action now. This is Savannah DeBach, 3-up through 14. for birdie. You want to talk about hitting it the right way? Love it. 2-1. Can they keep it going? It's special so far.
Oh, spoiler alert, Damon. They most certainly can. And look, we've already seen twin sister in this highlight. Here's the other one, Jasmine Leyevau, all tied up with Texas on the par 5 18th. This birdie putt to send Eastern Michigan improbably to the semifinals. Again, a school that had never even advanced to an NCAA regional before Josh Brewer got to town. They make it. They win 3.5 to 1.5 over Texas. So, folks, here's a snapshot of the NCAA semifinals on the women's side. Stanford going up against Eastern Michigan. In the other semifinal, Arkansas and Southern Cal. And for more on these matchups, let's bring in Brentley Romine, who is live in La Costa. And, Brentley, let's focus on that first semifinal out of the gates here. Southern Cal versus Arkansas. How do you see this one playing out?
Well, I mean, these are two of the very best programs in the last decade or so in women's college golf. Let's start with Arkansas, though. We know Maria Jose Marin, the champion of the Augusta National Women's Amateur a few weeks ago, and also a veteran-laden team with Reagan Zabilski and Abby Shute. But I can't help but notice that the anchor match, Natalie Blanian, the reason why you probably don't recognize that name is she's only played 7 times in 2 seasons, hasn't played a stroke play event since mid-March, was not part of the starting lineup for the first 4 rounds here at La Costa, but she is a match play dynamo. She beat Kiara Romero a couple of years ago for the clinching point at the Jackson T. Stevens Cup, and she's got no fear when it comes to this format. So she will get a spot in that anchor match, but USC going to be a formidable out, as we've seen so far on the leaderboard, gotten off to a bit of a head start. Bailey Shoemaker, you can't help but wonder if maybe she felt snubbed not being on that U.S. Curtis Cup team that will compete in LA in 2 weeks. She went out and routed her opponent this morning. Kathy Park, seems like that back issue is a thing of the past. And Jasmine Koo, one to keep an eye out. She got out hot early, got boat race this morning against Rianne Malixie of Duke, but Rianne was 8 under with no bogeys. It's hard to beat an opponent that hot. I talked with their head coach, Justin Silverstein, just a little bit ago. He's not worried at all about Jasmine Koo, who in 2 years already has the most individual victories in that storied program's history with 8. Arkansas's got a lot of work to do right now.
What about Eastern Michigan? Cinderella story, tears in their eyes, I guess. Can they keep it going, keep the pot boiling against the mighty Stanford Cardinal?
Well, I talked to their head coach, Josh Brewer, on the range about an hour ago, and he told his team at lunch he was honest with them. He said 99 out of 100 times, we're going to lose to the Stanford team, but why not let, I mean, it's very reminiscent of that 1980 U.S. hockey team. Why not let this be that one time? And so they really have nothing to lose. And when you talk about this Stanford team, I mean, more tournament wins in the last 6 years, 42, than head-to-head losses, 35. But match play, the great equalizer, Stanford, they've lost twice in match play this season. This is their 5th straight year in the semifinals, only 2 national championships to show for it. So Eastern Michigan, there's got to be at least some belief. And it's just truly a remarkable story that we've covered all week, going from outside the top 200 2 years ago when Josh Brewer took over after being fired at the University of Georgia. Now they're nearly a top 25 team in the country and one of the last 4 left. And of course, it's not possible without the financial support, an 8-figure investment from Game Above and an Eastern Michigan donor, an $8 million practice facility, in the money that's allowed them to go out and get players like the Leyevau twins, like a Savannah DeBock. And, but at the same time, so many people are making a big deal about money being invested in women's college golf. Last time I checked, Benjamin Franklin doesn't make birdie putts. You still have to have these players go out and compete. You have to get the right players. And as I said yesterday, they're comfortable here. You've seen a big contingent, especially from the Leyevau twins, who have spent pretty much the entire spring semester here in Oceanside, California, about 30 minutes away. There is a lot of support, both financially and from the fans. Why not, right? I mean, they got their slingshots, and we'll see if they can topple Goliath this afternoon.
Yes, indeed. Not sure Ben Franklin made any birdie putts, but Jasmine Leyevau stepped up at the end. Of course, semifinals coming your way, 6 p.m. Brentley Romine be part of that coverage as well. How about yesterday? Texas Junior Farrah O'Keefe took home the NCAA D1 individual title with a two-shot win over Stanford's Megagane, marking O'Keefe's fourth individual win of the season. Her national championship win clinched her spot as the 2026 Annika Award presented by Stiefel recipient, given every year to the top D1 college golfer. We send it over to Steve Burkowski.
Each and every year, the Annika Award presented by Stiefel is handed out to the top female collegiate golfer, and always good to be alongside our friend John Schenkel, Senior Vice President from Stiefel and Chairman of the Haskins Foundation, to announce this year's recipient.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. It was our pleasure again. This is the 13th year that the Haskins Foundation has presented the Annika Award, and we appreciate Stiefel as well as being the sponsor. This is the first year, however, that our winner comes from the University of Texas, and it's Farrah O'Keefe.
Farrah, congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
What's the initial reaction to winning this award?
I'm pretty speechless, to be honest. I don't know. I'm pretty excited. I think that's something that, you know, 11-year-old Farrah would be, wouldn't know what to do with herself about. So I'm proud of what I've accomplished. I'm proud of the people that I come from, and I'm proud to wear the burnt orange and represent what I get to every single day.
Maybe an 11-year-old Farrah wouldn't know what to do with this award, but when did the junior at Texas kind of realize this might be a possibility?
You know, I put in so much hard work over the off season, and I think I had a pretty strong fall. And then we wrote down a list of goals at the beginning of the spring, and that was on there. And so I knew going into the spring that, you know, I was going to try to play the best golf that I could mentally. I knew that I was capable of it physically, but I had to make sure that the mind was sharp enough. And I don't know. We put in so much hard work, and Coach did such a great job of making sure that all of us were prepared for this moment. And so I'm just really, really proud of, again, what I get to wear, what I get to represent, and I couldn't be happier.
How did you balance the desire to win this award but not letting it maybe become a little bit too much and let your play speak for itself?
I think you use it as fuel. You use this as the reminder to go back to work every day and keep putting in the hard work day after day, hour after hour. And I think that as soon as it becomes in the forefront of your mind, you can kind of forget about it. It's not going to work out for you. So I use it as fuel to help me wake up every morning and choose to outwork, you know, how hard I worked the day before. And I think that, I don't know, I'm just so excited. I don't know, it's so cool to see it all kind of work out. I don't know. It's kind of emotional.
How extra special is it that your peers, those in the media that cover you, think enough of you to say you were better than everyone else this year?
Oh, that means a lot. I just try to be authentic, try to be the person that I am. And I think that, you know, I try to be a friend to everybody. If they need me, they can text me or call me. I don't know. I think that's pretty cool that kind of my peers, the people that I play against every week, kind of voted in this direction. Again, I just couldn't be happier and more thankful.
Well, you're known to have a big smile. How much of a smile are you going to have bringing that back to Austin?
I mean, you can see it right now. I'm smiling pretty big. I don't know. It means a lot. It means the world.
Farrah, congratulations.
Thank you.
Farrah
so
O'Keefe, the 2026 Annika Award winner, presented by Stiefel.
Nicely done, Farrah, friend of the program. Now, since the inception of the Annika Award in 2014, there has been a notable list of recipients, a couple of UCLA Bruins and Allison Lee and Bronte Law. And don't sleep on Leona McGuire, Maria Fassi, and Rose Zhang. So nice, they won it twice.
Congratulations to Farrah O'Keefe on being named the 2026 recipient of the Annika Award presented by Stiefel. This is an incredible accomplishment, and you should be extremely proud.
We're back on Golf Today, folks. This week is First Tee Week as we celebrate the impact this organization is making through golf on kids all across the country. Founded nearly 30 years ago, First Tee serves more than 3 million kids a year on golf courses, at schools, community centers, as well, 150 chapters around the world. Look at the number of elementary schools and middle schools, the participating youth centers, and of course those all-important 9 core values, including honesty, integrity, confidence, and respect.
Damon. One of those alums was Sammy Panor, who was a participant at First Tee Southern Nevada for a decade before going on to play college golf by Biola University in Southern California, where she was the school's NCAA Woman of the Year nominee in 2022. Sammy has been a coach at First Tee Orange County since January 2024, where she leads the chapter's LPGA Girls Golf Program. We're pleased to be joined by Sammy now, and so great to see you. You started as a First Tee participant and now have returned as a coach. How did your own junior experience help shape the path that you took?
Yes, that is an amazing question. First Tee was the pathway to golf for me. In fact, my first pair of golf shoes came from a First Tee garage sale. They were not the prettiest, but that's what helped me get my start in golf. My dad had me going to my First Tee classes, and I started playing First Tee participants at our First Tee tournaments at the age of 9. And that's where I met, you know, my best friend up today. We met at 9 years old at a First Tee golf clinic. And without First Tee, I didn't come from a country club family. So it was just, it gave me the opportunity to play golf when I was a kid.
It's one thing to play golf and learn those important 9 core values. It's another thing to give back as a coach. How did you make that transition in wanting to help young people chart their own path forward?
Absolutely. The people that helped shape my life are my First Tee coaches and the coaches that I met when I was a kid playing golf. And to be that person for someone or one of our own participants is absolutely just fulfilling. To be able to give back and have an impact on the lives of the kids around us and the next generation of golfers, leaders, professionals. It's just, that's what brings me back to the program.
Sammy, I'm curious, you're very active on TikTok, you're active on Instagram. How does social media play a role in the way that golf instruction can be consumed today?
It's absolutely revolutionary. I think the way that people can learn golf, it's so accessible now. Like anyone can learn golf. You don't have to be at a country club. You don't have to pay someone hundreds and hundreds and thousands of dollars to learn. If you just wanted to get started, you just needed some clubs and maybe a little bit of social media to learn how to the basics of a golf swing. And then what's awesome about First Tee is we make our program super affordable so anyone can join. And if you need financial aid, we can also offer that as well to any participants that may need that for programming.
From TikTok to old school letter writing, celebrating coaches, First Tee is, if you were writing a letter to the coaches that kind of got you going, got you to fall in love with the game, taught you the 9 core values, what would you say in that letter to your former coaches?
Yes, that would go to my coach, Coach Sam. She taught me a very important lesson of integrity and confidence. When I was around 11 years old, I got disqualified from a national championship, or not national championship, a state championship, where I signed for the wrong score. And she had to DQ me, and I learned a really hard lesson that day. And that is a lesson that I take to this day to, first off, you know, have integrity overall and to also have confidence and not let that obstacle knock me down. I ended up coming back the next year and winning that tournament. And I thank her for that moment and for that lesson and just for empowering me through that.
It's an incredible story, Sammy. How much do you share that story with maybe the young girls? I know attracting young girls and females to this sport is very important to you. How much do you share that story of adversity that you've turned into a positive?
I think it's so important that, especially with me, with all the stories I've gone through, my favorite thing to do is to share that with other players. I had a girl last week, she was kind of frustrated with her golf game, was kind of throwing a little temper tantrum on the golf course. And I was like, hey, you know, I was in that same position in college during my senior year of conference. I was really upset about going into the water. I ended up putting my golf clubs a little too close to the water and a gust of wind blew the golf clubs into the lake, and I went to go grab it, and I actually fell into the lake. And that's when I let my emotions get the best of me, and I learned a really good lesson from there to just kind of be level-headed when you want to have those hot-headed moments. And I'm so glad that I had those experiences so I can share it with the girls today who are in our program.
Sammy, you're such a bright light with a bubbly personality. Thanks so much for joining us today and all you do to give back to the kids at First Tee. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, coming up next on Golf Today, we're checking in on the winners who didn't win over the weekend, including Blades Brown, the 19-year-old phenom. You could see a whole lot more on the PGA Tour later this year. We'll explain coming up next.
back on Golf Today, and this was the winning moment on Sunday as Wyndham Clark earned his fourth career PGA Tour victory in the CJ Cup Byron Nelson on the strength of that final round 60, Wyndham's first win since the 2024 AT&T Double Beach Pro-Am.
From Wyndham to winners who didn't win. How about this 19-year-old Blades Brown birdie at 3?
Needed to finish inside in 21st place in order to lock up special temporary membership. You want to know why Blades Brown is so good this young? Look at that golf swing, though. Clean, efficient.
Yeah.
Great work with his swing coach, Justin Parsons. This one's stuffed it to 5 feet for another birdie.
Yeah.
It's 1,800.
He's precocious, confident, strong, and while knowing what was at stake last week, up to the task, another birdie. It's to 19 under, finish at 18 under, and inside that number that you talked about, finish T14 at the CJ Cup, Byron Nelson, thus securing special temporary membership. You see the PGA Tour starts getting more experience. You see the runner-up finishes on the Korn Ferry Tour, which is important as well, because he has a bit of a conundrum. Ryan, do you keep playing on the PGA Tour via unlimited special exemptions, or do you and you watch your Korn Ferry Tour's number standings fall?
I mean, it's a fascinating decision to make. Do you choose one route exclusively, or do you mix and match like he has done at this point in the PGA Tour season? If he goes the PGA Tour route, he needs to finish the equivalent of the top 70 in the FedEx Cup standings by the end of the year. That's going to be a tall task, just like any other PGA Tour player.
Right.
Korn Ferry Tour, he obviously just needs to finish in the top 20 to be fully exempt for 2027. The safest choice would be the Korn Ferry Tour.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of players would tell you that. You don't need to deal with the last-minute decisions and a lot of travel. You can learn how to win. He said it's taught him really to be more aggressive.
Yep.
I think the one thing that he needs to do, though, is pick a path and stick to it. I think that's what most PGA Tour players would tell you as well. If you look just last week as an example, he played the CJ Cup, Byron Nelson, did not play in the Korn Ferry Tour event.
Right.
As a result, he dropped from 9th to 13th in those point standings in just 1 week. So the worst case scenario for Blades Brown, I think, at the end of 2026 would be a scenario where he doesn't get fully exempt status on the PGA Tour and he doesn't finish among the top 20 on the Korn Ferry Tour because he's trying to get both routes satisfied at the exact same time. I would pick one and stick with it. He's going to have ample opportunities on the PGA Tour with the sponsor exemptions as well.
Blades doesn't strike me as a young man who's worried about playing things safe. He's already someone who skipped college, turned professional as a teenager, and is already showing that I think he can hang with the big dogs in this game. He is the most mature 19-year-old. I met him when he was 17. He is the most mature young person I think I've ever met in this professional realm. I think he's ready for the biggest stage.
It certainly appears that way, and he wouldn't be the first player. Jordan Spieth certainly comes to mind about a decade and a half ago of a player who could succeed in these scenarios, who's in the final group of the American Express, top 10s at a couple PGA Tour events as well. It would take a little bit of an ego hit, I think, for him to say, nope, PGA Tour can wait. I want to satisfy the Korn Ferry Tour requirements. Don't know if it's going to happen.
Blades Brown, it's a household name. Golf Today is back after this. It is a fascinating time to watch the PGA Tour and how its competitive structure, what it's going to look like going forward.
No shortage of options as it comes to viewing the PGA Tour in 2027. We talked a lot about the schedule crunch of the players and how fatigued they are once the year's second major rolls around. Next year's going to be even worse. And again, this is just sort of a transition year before the future competitions committee really rolls out its vision for 2028 and beyond. But you're looking at a lot of big-time tournaments from Phoenix to Bay Hill to Doral, all really crammed in less than a two-month period. It's going to be a lot of high-level golf, a lot of big-name courses.
High-level golf and a lot of challenge, I feel like. You have different players, this Tier 1, Tier 2. I know that's for 2028, but that still lives today in terms of guys who are journeymen and the guys who are superstars.
We've always had the class system on the PGA Tour, and that's apparent now, even with the signature event model and the full field model. It's just going to be formalized.
Yeah.
It's just going to be official moving in 2028. I'm not sure that's necessarily a bad thing either.
Is it a good thing? Change is good?
Change is absolutely good, and it comes from Brian Rolup, who is used to doing this at a much larger scale with the NFL.
Yeah, fascinating time for the PGA Tour. We'll continue to follow the story as it unfolds. The PGA Tour in Fort Worth, Texas this week. We will see you tomorrow. Have a safe evening, everybody.